Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 476, titled More About the Schmitzes, the Underground Reich, and September 11th. This is being recorded on September 19th of the year 2004. I'm now beginning my second quarter century on the air, so an anniversary of sorts. We're going to return to the subject of the Schmitz family. We've talked a little bit about the background of John G. Schmitz, the ultra-right-wing former congressman from Southern California, more connections in a switchboard, and quite a few of those pointing in the direction of the underground Reich and related elements of the ultra-far right. We concluded by taking a look at the fact that Christendom College was the institution to which people who wanted to memorialize John G. Schmitz after his death should contribute. That was founded by Warren Carroll, who was closely associated with Conservatism USA and H.L. Hunt. And one of the things that we looked at in RFA program number 11 was this fact. After Jack Ruby was arrested for killing Oswald inside the Dallas jail, there were copies of Warren Carroll's Lifeline on the seat of his car. The section was on heroism, on how to become a hero. This is interesting because one of the first reasons Ruby gave for killing Oswald was, quote, I wanted to show them a Jew had guts, unquote. And the elder Schmitz, John G. Schmitz, was fiercely anti-Semitic. What we're going to do now, by way of setting some of the background against which Joseph E. Schmitz, the Inspector General of the Pentagon, should be viewed, we're going to review some information from For the Record program number 469, The Schmitzes, GOP Family Values. And what we're going to look at right now is an excerpt talking about the elder John Schmitz's, John G. Schmitz's son, John P. Schmitz. This from an online article called Republican Family Values, Sex Criminals. And skipping down, there's still another chapter to the story. John G. Schmitz's son, John P. Schmitz, did not share his father's disdain for George Bush, whom he served as deputy counsel from 1984 to 1993. He, that is John P. Schmitz, was involved in Iran-Contra as a deputy to C. Boyden Gray and as an associate of Janet Rehnquist. Schmitz was one of the few Iran-Contra players to refuse to be interviewed by the independent counsel and was highly instrumental, as was Rehnquist, in protecting Bush. Bush was never questioned, and a diary he kept was never examined. Walsh's final report said, quote, the criminal investigation of Bush was regrettably incomplete, unquote. And still more from that same article. Since then, John P. Schmitz has popped up every once in a while. He seems to have had dealings with Iraq before the Gulf War, and with his present law firm has worked for Enron, Bayer, producer of Cipro, and United Airlines, a focal point of the 9/11 lawsuit. His firm also has a Central Asian office in Tashkent. Schmitz, along with many men of high repute, is a member of the board of directors of the American Council on Germany and the Atlantic Council of the U.S. And of the American Council on Germany, we read from a posting on the Disinfopedia website. The American Council on Germany is a private, non-profit national organization that was incorporated in New York City in 1952. Its founding leaders were John J. McCloy, Eric M. Warburg, and officers include Richard Burt. Among the board of directors are Henry A. Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft. Briefly, we took a look at Brent Scowcroft, who's involved with the Turkish-American Council, the focal point of Sybil Edmonds' ire. John J. McCloy has more connections than a switchboard, headed up the American occupation government in Germany, was a key member of the Warren Commission, released Nazi war criminals into the service of the U.S. intelligence service, and also, as an official with Chase Manhattan Bank and other institutions, was involved with setting up much of the machinations of the worst aspects of the international financial machine. One of the things John J. McCloy appears to have been deeply involved in was the setting up of the Black Eagle Trust that we looked at in connection with the book Gold Warriors. The Warburgs are a family that was deeply involved with I.G. Farben and financing the Third Reich. Richard Burt, a protege of Henry Kissinger, who in turn was a protege of General Bolling, deeply involved not only in Project Paperclip, but many of the other machinations involving the import of Nazi war criminals at the end of World War II. Still more, and this is from a website, parapolitics.info, more about the law firm with which John P. Schmitz is involved. We were shocked to observe how tough and somewhat persistent Richard Benveniste was during his opportunities for questioning. This is the same Richard Benveniste, a former Watergate prosecutor, who is a partner in the German international law firm Mayer Brown Rowe and Maw, which happens to be the lead firm representing United Airlines against September 11th victim families in the New York City litigation in Judge Alvin K. Hellerstein's District Court in Manhattan. This famous lawyer even represented the most recognized American drug dealer in the history of the United States, Barry Seal of Mena, Arkansas fame. But interestingly, Benveniste won our award as the most tenacious interrogator on both days, even though the lines of questioning were not consistently intense or pressing on a continual basis. Curiously, no one has questioned whether Mayor Brown's partners would have water cooler and whispering access, unquote, to all the subpoenaed discovery requests and information flow regarding both the Keene Commission hearings and the depositions, public and private, but also Judge Hellerstein's New York City litigation. But that's not the half of it. For the Mayor Brown law firm has another partner named John P. Schmitz, who was the 12-year deputy counsel to George H.W. Bush during his vice presidency and presidency, thus affording the White House a behind-the-scenes source for information flow, discovery, subpoenas, and evidence access regarding both the commission and the New York litigation. And parenthetically, bear in mind as we continue with our discussion of Mayor Brown and John Schmitz, bear in mind that his brother Joseph E. Schmitz is basically the highest legal official in the Pentagon and is involved in some of the very sensitive areas that we touched on in Side 1. So the Schmitz brothers constitute a very, very important nexus indeed. Continuing with discussion of Mayor Brown and Joseph P. Schmitz. Additionally, Mayor Brown also has clients that include Bayer AG, German maker of the antibiotic Cipro, which fights anthrax, about which Larry Klayman and Judicial Watch will have keen interest. JW has filed suit seeking the administration's anthrax documents to ascertain why the White House started taking heavy doses of Cipro on the day of the attacks, nearly a month before anthrax was even discovered on Capitol Hill, and while postal workers continued to sort mail in contaminated offices, some dying in the process. John Schmitz's Mayor Brown profile also reveals Enron, adding that, quote, "We were active in Germany with Enron until the end. It, bankruptcy, surprised me as well as anyone else." Moreover, Mayor Brown also represents Deutsche Bank on a regular basis regarding its electronic commerce activities. And curiously, Schmitz's law firm maintains an office in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, along with Enron, if only to make sure oil is well in the Caspian Sea basin. And Deutsche Bank is knee-deep in pre-9/11 insiders trading stock profits. Enough said. And from John P. Schmitz's curriculum vitae, from the website of Mayor Brown, the law firm in which he's a partner, German law firm in which he's a partner, "Leading U.S. and German political regulatory specialist represents U.S. and European companies on complex international transactions and regulatory matters. Clients include Deutsche Welle, German TV, parenthetically closely associated with the German intelligence service, Bayer AG, Bertelsmann, Bosch GmbH, Global Trade and Regulatory Consulting on behalf of U.S. energy clients in Germany, played a leading role in international agreements such as the 1996 U.S.-German Open Skies Aviation Agreement and the 1997 U.S.-EU Heavy Electrical Equipment Procurement Dispute and Agreement, resulting in the reform of the German Procurement Code." And in terms of his more about John P. Schmitz, and for a more detailed exposition of some of the significance of these connections, again, For the Record 469, either listen to the audio file on the WFMU website, or you can read about it on the Spitfire website, or you can read it and listen to it. Employment. Deputy counsel to President George Bush, the White House, Washington, D.C., 1989 through 93. Deputy counsel to Vice President, the White House, Washington, D.C., 1985 to 89. Wilmer Cutler Pickering, Washington, D.C., 1984 to 1985. By the way, a firm that was representing Deutsche Bank, or excuse me, Deutsche Telekom, in its successful bid and revolutionary bid to gain control of U.S. telecommunications company Deutsche Telekom, controlled by the German government. We've talked about that in our series about German corporate control over the American media. Still more, Robert Bosch Foundation Fellowship, Office of Bundestag member Matthias Wismann in Bonn, and Office of General Counsel Robert Bosch GmbH, Stuttgart, Germany. By the way, Matthias Wismann, the treasurer for the CDU at the time the CDU funding scandal broke, later became a partner with Wilmer Cutler and Pickering. Law clerk to the Honorable Antonin Scalia, U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C. Scalia, like Joseph E. Schmitz, a member of the Federalist Society. And by the way, among his educational credits was a Dobryansky Fellowship from Georgetown University, named after Lev Dobryansky, Ukrainian immigrant closely associated with the fascist ABN and the OUNB of Stefan Bandera, associated with the Ukrainian Quarterly, again closely linked to the Galen ABN milieu. Lev Dobryansky also was part of a military intelligence reserve unit involved with developing martial law contingency plans. Returning now, that's the brother. That's John P. Schmitz, the son of John G. Schmitz. Now, his brother, Joseph E. Schmitz, and bear in mind the sensitive position that John P. Schmitz is in vis-a-vis investigations touching on September 11th. Now, his brother, Joseph E. Schmitz, is basically the highest legal official of the Pentagon and also in a position to affect many, many sensitive September 11th-related investigations. From the biography, the curriculum vitae of Joseph E. Schmitz, from the website of the World Security Network, something we're going to talk about later. And Joseph E. Schmitz was a U.S. naval officer and served with great distinction in that regard. Among the things he did was that he served as the navigator of a German destroyer through the personnel exchange program. He still maintains German language proficiency. And again, he's a member of the steering committee of the Washington Lawyers Chapter of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies, the Federalist Society, an ultra-right-wing, I would say, totalitarian-minded legal society, which many legal minds believe is completely subverting the foundations of American jurisprudence. He also was a Young Leader alumnus of the American Council on Germany that we spoke about. His brother was involved with the same institution. And in 1999, he was invested into the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. More about the background of Joseph E. Schmitz. This is from the Latino News Network on the Dartmouth University website, www.dartmouth.edu, dated April 25th. And it reads in part, "A U.S. Supreme Court ruling Tuesday now makes it harder to prosecute alleged government discrimination and could raise hopes for English-only laws throughout the country. In the Alexander v. Sandoval case, lawyers representing a Mexican immigrant named Martha Sandoval argued that the state of Alabama's English-only law discriminated against Sandoval's ability to take a driver's license exam, which the state provides only in English. In a razor-thin 5-4 decision, the court ruled that Alabama did not violate the Civil Rights Act on the notion that, in this case, not providing Spanish driver's license exams has a disparate impact on minorities. Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist, by the way, a Federalist, and Justices Antonin and Scalia, by the way, a Federalist, Anthony M. Kennedy, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Clarence Thomas comprised the majority vote." Skipping down. "Though this case did not rule whether or not Alabama was allowed to maintain an English-only law, the court's ruling can be considered as a victory for proponents of English as this country's official language." Quote, "We are delighted the Supreme Court has rejected the ACLU's attempt to kill official English in Alabama," unquote, said Joseph E. Schmitz, a board member of U.S. English, an organization pushing for establishing English as this country's official language. The American Civil Liberties Union helped bring on this case action suit. Quote, "Although the majority opinion is limited to a narrow issue of congressional intent, this is a tremendous symbolic victory for official English." So Joseph E. Schmitz is on the board of directors for U.S. English. By the way, Arnold Schwarzenegger was also a backer of that same organization. This is a Mother Jones article about U.S. English. It's called Arnold's Language Barrier. And after talking about Arnold's participation on this particular organization, it discusses its background and affiliations. That is to say, the background and affiliations of U.S. English, on whose board of directors Joseph E. Schmitz serves. U.S. English Chairman Mauro E. Mujica, however, defended his organization as a bridge between cultural divides. But the group's questionable past may overshadow any shred of credibility the organization had. U.S. English, which among other things calls on the government to perform its official business in English, has quite a history of rather dubious players, to say the least. Perhaps the most infamous among them being James Lubinskas, a spokesman for the group, and John Tanton, the group's co-founder. According to the Washington Post's Terry M. Neal, a private memo written by Tanton illustrates the co-founder's racist tendencies. Quote, "In this society, Will the present majority peaceably hand over its political power to a group that is simply more fertile, unquote? Tanton wrote in his 1988 memo. Can homo contraceptivus compete with horno progenitivo if our borders aren't controlled? Perhaps this is the first instance in which those with their pants up are going to get caught by those with their pants down. As whites see their power and control over their lives declining, will they simply go quietly into the night? Or will there be an explosion? Unquote. And the plot thickens. Neil further reports that the Southern Poverty Law Center has listed Lubinskas as a contributing editor to the racist publication of the American Renaissance magazine. The magazine's editor, Jared Taylor, is also leader of the white supremacist group Council of Conservative Citizens. Neil reports that Lubinskas even shared a stage with former Louisiana Klansman David Duke. And again, on the board of directors of that organization is Joseph E. Schmitz. There's also a bio of the founder, Moro E. Mujica, who appears from his picture here to be probably of joint Latino and German extraction. Interesting background for somebody who is going to promote U.S. English. Moro E. Mujica, who was born in Chile and immigrated to the United States in 1965, has been chairman of the board and CEO of U.S. English since January of 1993. After discussing his educational background, he's fluent in Spanish, English, and French, has a working knowledge of German and Italian, and is currently studying Russian. Again, a 1965 immigré from Chile, the founder of U.S. English. Another interesting inclination, one might say, of Joseph E. Schmitz, and this I want to stress before I get into this is something that is indeterminate in nature. Something that, as is often the case with the material I present on this program, raises more questions than it answers, but something that I think nonetheless needs to be considered at length and in detail, and that concerns the Steuben Society and some of the inclinations of Joseph E. Schmitz in the direction of the things Steuben. Now, General von Steuben, General Baron von Steuben, was a genuine American Revolutionary War hero. There were many German mercenaries who fought on the side of the British. There were also some who fought on the side of the revolutionaries in the United States. And this is not to be misunderstood as characterizing General von Steuben as in any way sinister. He was a genuine Revolutionary War hero and a close aide to George Washington, but rather it is what the von Steuben name has been used for in recent history that I think raises some questions. This is actually an article from the World Security Network website by Joseph E. Schmitz, The Enduring Legacy of Inspector General von Steuben, and what Joseph E. Schmitz seeks to do is to run the Inspector General's office as it was run by General von Steuben. Skipping down, while today's Army Inspector General is the modern-day personification of the enduring legacy of General von Steuben, it is also clear that General von Steuben is much more than the founding father of the Army Inspector General system. He is, of course, that. Not only is the first lesson plan of the Army Inspector General School devoted to General von Steuben, the entire three-week course is permeated with the von Steuben model. He is the enduring prime role model for every one of the 239 principal Army Inspectors General. Now again, this is not in any way to cast aspersions on Baron von Steuben, nor is this determinative, but one of the things that's interesting, given the inclination of the Schmitz family to things German, including things specifically connected with the Underground Reich, and given the far-right affiliations and inclinations of this family, what is interesting is that the Steuben Society, or Steuben Society, was used as a front for Third Reich Fifth Column activities in the United States. From a very fine website called www.spiritone.com, which has sort of an online book called The Nazi Hydra in America. Again, a website I would recommend. Again, www.spiritone.com. And the full URL will be on the description for this on the Spitfire website. This is an excerpt. These are some excerpts from that, and including some of the revelations of John Roy Carlson in his book Undercover, talking about some of the Steuben Society members and their Nazi Fifth Column activities in World War II. One such congressman and Steuben Society member was Republican House member John Schaefer from Wisconsin. His congressional record was one of complete opposition to any defense measure. In speaking with Carlson, investigative reporter posing as a pro-fascist, Schaefer was quoted as follows, talking about a revolution against democracy. Quote, the bloody kind. There will be purges and Roosevelt will be cleaned right off the earth along with the Jews. We'll have a military dictatorship to save the country, unquote. Schaefer leaves little doubt as to his feelings about democracy in the quote. Another senator, Republican Rufus Holman from Oregon, openly praised Hitler on the floor of the Senate. The small excerpt below from the speech leaves no real doubt as to his pro-Nazi views. Quote, I doubt if the right is all on one side among the present belligerents. At least Hitler has broken the control of the international bankers and traders over the rewards for the labor of the common people of Germany. In my opinion, it would be advantageous if the control of the international bankers, parenthetically read Jews, and traders over the wages and savings of the manor of the people living of the people of England could be broken by the English people, and if the control of the international bankers and traders over the wages and savings and the manner of living of the people of the United States could be broken by the people of the United States, unquote. The code words of international bankers and traders meant Jews. Holman inserted several pro-Nazi propaganda pieces into the congressional record as well. Nor was this the only time Holman had praised Hitler. As Oregon state treasurer, he had praised Hitler's sterilization program, resulting in the amendment of Oregon's sodomy law in 1935 to include all moral degenerates and sexual perverts, whether they had committed a crime or not. Oregon at the time used castration rather than vasectomy. It'd be interesting, parenthetically, and in a somewhat jocular vein, it'd be interesting to see what would happen. It'd be interesting to see the reaction of this fellow Holman if he was confronted with some of the activities of the Schmitz family vis-a-vis sexual conduct, tying a hair around an infant's penis so tightly that it was almost severed, and again, the unfortunate activities of the most unfortunate Mary Kay Letourneau, someone who is to be pitied, but in the context of the larger Schmitz family, her unfortunate situation does raise some interesting questions. Continuing with this from the Spiritone, Lundin was secretly pro-Nazi and received money not only directly from Sylvester Weyrich, but also from the German Board of Trade and the Steuben Society. Maloney had determined that other congressmen had accepted Nazi money and deals to publish books through the notorious Flanders Hall, a fascist publisher closely associated with Sylvester Weyrich. And again, these are some of the people associated with the Steuben Society, which was a Nazi fifth column front in World War II. And interestingly, the Steubens and their descendants are closely associated with the World Security Network. And Joseph E. Schmitz is a member of the World Security Network, and his bio is on their websites. Some of the executives of the World Security Network, and we probably won't have time to go into all of their curricula vitae, the president and founder is Dr. Hubertus Hoffmann. Dr. Hoffmann has worked as an advisor to the European Parliament, the German Bundestag, State Secretary of Defense Peter Kurt Wutzbach, MP, and the U.S. Senate, Sam Nunn and Gary Hart, in defense affairs for many years. He was a research fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Georgetown University. He worked as a journalist in the White House Press Corps, as editor in ZDF, the largest TV station in Europe, and managing director of large German media companies. Dr. Hoffmann holds a Ph.D. in political science with summa cum laude and is a lawyer as well. Dr. Hoffmann is a reserve officer in the German Army Field Artillery, and it goes on to some of his other activities, including supporting the Afghan Mujahideen against the Soviets. Dieter Farwick, global editor-in-chief, former director of Germany's Federal Armed Forces Intelligence Service, basically former chief of German military intelligence. Mr. Farwick is retired brigadier general of the German Army. He was a close aide to former German Defense Minister Manfred Werner, the later NATO Secretary General, and is author of 5 books about defense policy. Hans-Walter Janacek, Vice President. Mr. Janacek was born in Vienna, Austria, joined United Press and Reuters, and worked as foreign editor of Vienna's largest newspaper, Courier, and economic editor of Express. He served as director of the Austrian Information Service in New York in the 60s and in the 70s as special assistant to Undersecretary General for Public Information and Secretary of the UN Information Committee, skipping down. Mark Robinow, Vice President. American-born Mark Robinow has been a public relations and marketing consultant for over 20 years. His work has let him live in Europe and the United States, where he has built up a vast network of business relations, mostly in media, television, and the art world. Translated in parenthetically, question, Borman, question mark. Mark also has a track record in setting up charitable organizations for its clients. And again, it's a very vague general CV. After living in New York for 5 years, he has returned to Munich, Germany, where he is actively supporting the World Security Network and in particular developing and marketing the Codes for Tolerance project. Klaus Becker, editor, United Kingdom. And again, more about Klaus Becker. Again, this is basically a German organization with very strong American affiliations. Of Klaus Becker. During the same period, he also served as secretary-treasurer of the German group of the Trilateral Commission. From 1988 to 97, he was a research fellow at the German Council on Foreign Relations. And the people involved with this organization have similar curricula vitae. And another member of the World Security Network is Henning von Steuben, member of the International Advisory Board of the World Security Network. Henning von Steuben, a direct descendant, by the way, the direct blood descendant of General von Steuben. Henning Hubertus von Steuben, born 1951, studied law at the George August Universität Göttingen. After his journalistic education and an internship at CBS Los Angeles, he reported for different German newspapers, broadcasting services, and TV stations covering national and international events under it from Africa, Middle East, and North America. Since 1987, he works as an editor for the newspapers Bild and Bild am Sonntag. He is specialized in politics, military, and defense topics. So again, the von Steuben affinity of Joseph E. Schmitz is something that raises more questions than it answers, but I do think it's worth covering and worth pursuing those leads to see whether or not they bear out in substance. Certainly the World Security Network is something that I think needs to be very carefully examined and gives all superficial indications of being a Bormann/Underground Reich front organization. The various programs and lectures I've done over the years are available from a CD duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email address is mail, at spitfirelist.com. There's a website, www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfirelist is one word, Spitfirelist. There are descriptions of all of the programs that are available. The For the Record section features detailed, annotated, article-length descriptions of all of the For the Record programs available within a week or so of the airing of the broadcast. Those of you who only use the programs themselves are missing a huge resource. I know sometimes I have people contact me and say that they find some of the programs difficult to follow. I can easily believe that, and that's exactly why I put the descriptions together. You can go to the internet, you can even, those of you who aren't online at home, you can go to a library, print up the descriptions for each show, and you can read about it, and I think that'll help to clear up any questions that you have. Also note that the descriptions often contain material that I did not have time to include in the original broadcast. Spitfire website also has a search function. It features the landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available for download. That is a vitally important book, essential for understanding the thesis presented on For the Record. It was authored by the late heroic Paul Manning. It's available for download for free. And there's also a link on the Spitfire website to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that now features the actual declassified U.S. government documents that prove the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II. In the latter capacity, those documents place Prescott Bush Sr. involved with organizations that were trafficking Nazi money abroad after World War II, therefore placing Prescott Bush Sr. in the Bormann flight capital milieu. And last but certainly not least, there are links on the Spitfire website to two websites maintained by the heroic station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. More recent For the Record programs are available on streaming real audio at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 476. More about the Schmitzes, the Underground Reich, and September 11th. This is being recorded on September 19th of 2004. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.